You're listening to Art Snap, a podcast giving you a quick skim of famous works of art.
Hey, this is Claire.
And this is Zach. Hey, Claire, how you doing?
Hello, Zach. Doing good.
It's great to see you this week. I know that things have been pretty busy in both our worlds, so it's
good to see you. Yes, it's been crazy, but it's really good to get together, dive into some art with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It's always kind of energizing for me to get back into our art world, and I feel like this week's piece is definitely energizing.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Well, it's a piece that kind of takes us on a journey through history and also, I don't know, fills up our plates, if you will.
Fills our plates. Is mm-hmm. it about food?
Sort of. There are plates and it is a party. We could call it a dinner party.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking it's Judy Chicago.
Yes, yes. Okay, so you know she's one of my favorites, and this is one of her kind of big multimedia installations, kind of the one that really propelled her, I think, forward. It's called The Dinner Party from 1979, and it's one of the first kind of feminist works of art that I really got to explore and learn about.
Well, tell me, how did you stumble across it for the first time?
Well, you remember that I told you about my friend Linda. She was my professor in college, and she taught this course on female heroes in religion and art, and it was fantastic. And one of the artists that she focused on was Judy Chicago, who, as an artist in the early 1970s, worked to really open this door to expressing the feminist experience and to share her experience as a woman through her artwork.
Well, that's awesome because, you know, hard to do back in the 1960s and 70s. Not super easy. Hopefully becoming easier as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to it, but I think it was really difficult. And I think the dinner party is really a culmination of this effort and her self-discovery that's really become an iconic work of feminist and historical perspectives. But it was also about bringing the stories of both real and kind of, I'll call them mythical or archetypal women into the modern conversation, a way of really kind of looking at history of femininity in a bigger way, a way of kind of remembering and sharing those stories.
I can't wait to hear. Describe this piece for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's imagine it's March 1979. You open the mailbox and find an invitation to a dinner party at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. You get all dressed up, you pick out your favorite frock, and you arrive at the venue just on time. You walk into the dark room, and you find this kind of beautiful, illuminated, perfectly set triangular table in the center of the room. It's got equal sides, actually each representing kind of the feminist ideal of this equalized world.
Okay, like a triangle table, so mm-hmm. symbol of the goddess, maybe?
Yes, yes, very good. And each of the 39 place settings around this table is set for a different, either kind of real or archetypal woman from history that includes a kind of uniquely embroidered runner, kind of like a placemat with the guest's name, maybe some artwork about who they were, a chalice or a cup, and utensils, a napkin, a plate. I mean, the full place setting. It's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And the plate might be the most exciting part because it really is kind of this unique 3D ceramic piece that describes kind of who that woman was, but also is just incredibly beautiful to look at.
Oh my goodness. So 39 pieces of art all put mm-hmm. into a giant installation with many pieces within it. But you're leaving out, I feel like you're holding back on these plates. You love these plates, right? Do you want to tell us something else about it?
These plates are uniquely shaped, and each one describes the person that is sitting at that place setting, but each one's also reflective of the female anatomy. It's kind of like a vulva, but each is different, right? So each has, maybe one has leaves, maybe one has flowers, one has fruit. And so that is part of kind of what ties this whole tablescape together. That creates kind of this cohesive experience across all the table settings is that kind of uniqueness of femininity.
Okay, so a female anatomy themed dinner party, if you will.
Yeah, totally. And one designed to kind of flip the idea of traditionally masculine and feminine roles and themes on its head. For example, historically, women were always the ones who would prepare the meals, and they would kind of be serving to and consumed by the men at the table. The men were the ones who got to sit at the table.
Right. So I read that she was kind of building the idea on Da Vinci's iconic Last Supper setting.
Yeah, she did. It's a perfect example, too, of how you know, there are no women depicted in the storytelling of that theme, in that piece. They prepped the meal, they made the meal, they cooked it for probably a day or two, and then they silently kind of recede from view in the piece. And so Judy Chicago thought, well, gosh, what if we just, you know, make a table set just for these famous women and make them the honored guests, make them the ones who were at the forefront of the story, which is kind of great.
What a cool, impressive guest list. So how did she decide who gets invited to this table? How did Judy Chicago plan her, you know, guest list of women to highlight?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how she decided who, but I mean, it really kind of looks at the bigger picture of history. So there are three sides of the table, and it's actually 13 on each side to mirror the Last Supper. But some of her early sketches were actually of a circular table, but eventually it kind of evolved into a triangle, this kind of form we see today.
So everyone RSVP'd yes to her dinner party then.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, I would, although I obviously would not have been invited. But, you know, the first side really goes from kind of the primordial goddess of prehistory. So that kind of gets into that archetypal storytelling. And then passing by Kali, the Hindu goddess, and Hatshepsut from Egypt, and then ending with Hypatia of, you know, classical Rome. And then the second side starts with Marcella in the beginnings of Christianity, passing by St. Hildegard of Bingen and Artemisia Gentileschi, the 17th century painter. And then rolling right into the third side with Sacagawea, Sojourner Truth, kind of the beginnings of America, Margaret Sanger, and then ending with Georgia O'Keeffe, who is actually the most contemporary woman featured at the table.
That's impressive to design and set a table for that many people, let alone, you know, personalizing each table setting with a work of art. And what a power list of celebrities.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, I know the amount of work it takes to just host a few friends over for a themed dinner party, right?
Exactly. Well, and actually, you're really good at that. You're good at the theme part. Actually,
thanks.
All of your parties are themed, which is fantastic. But this was also 5 years of work, right? And so this is 5 years of work, $500,000 of investment, and then 400 volunteers to make this happen. I mean, it was no small feat.
I need 400 volunteers.
Yes, you do.
At my bidding.
Absolutely. But not to mention the vast amounts of like research and designing and planning that really had to happen to make this a reality.
Well, yeah. And it's so multimedia. It's highlighting everything that women through time have, you know, created. Women-centered art forms we've talked about. Mm-hmm. The textiles, the pottery, ceramics, the needlework, beading.
Yeah, absolutely. And things that were so often kind of considered crafts or not even really true art throughout history. So, you know, then the underneath of the table is interesting too, because it's a beautiful tiled floor with the names of 999 other women from history that are associated with the 39 that are seated at the table.
Wow. It really looks like an impressive space, and one that she really tried to bring these women together and, you know, make their stories one, really, and even though they're completely disparate, putting them in the forefront.
Yeah, it did. And I think it was part of her journey of kind of self-reflection. And that's how I think you asked the question, like, how did she choose? I don't know, but I would guess that's part of, these are people that were meaningful in her life and that part of her self-discovery as a woman and her spiritual journey, whatever that looked like. But of course, great art isn't without great controversy. And after its debut in 1980, it was quickly described as both kind of an incredible tome of women in history, but also as kind of this, one person called it 3D ceramic pornography.
Oh my goodness. Of course they said that. And I'm sure it was a man who said that while he was like stuffing his own porno under his mattress, right?
Yeah, no doubt. In fact, it was a man. It was actually a U.S. senator. And this came up because the piece was planned to go to the University of the District of Columbia after its exhibition. But the U.S. Senate actually threatened to withhold financial support from the school if they accepted this work from Judy Chicago.
It's hard to think that that was only 40 years ago. Yeah, a lot has changed since then, although, you know, still a lot of work to do.
True. And that was her point with the piece, about which she said, you know, a powerful work of art has the ability to shape the way we see reality, which women have not always been able to participate in.
Yeah, art is so powerful. And she's highlighting not only women's experiences, but the history, the politics, issues of sexuality, like everything through this work.
Yeah, of course, it's also worth noting that, you know, this third wave of kind of feminist thought and the lens that we use to view the piece today helps us understand better, you know, who wasn't at the table. And that's another criticism of the piece that it kind of reflects this white Western framework and that it hasn't done much to underscore the lives of women of color. You know, even Alice Walker, who, you know, wrote The Color Purple, she was a tough critic. And the exceptions really are kind of Sacagawea and Sojourner Truth at the table. But then, of course, there are others who are named throughout the tile floor and in other spaces. But that it has been one of the historic criticisms of it.
Well, in 40 years and a third wave of feminism, we're thinking about the research, we're sharing information, and we're storytelling very differently now. But I don't think we should undermine the significance of the work as kind of the beginning of scaffolding where we're at now.
Yeah, true. And also think about it this way. There was no Google when Judy Chicago was developing this work in the 1970s. And as she said, many of the women that today we think about, oh, this person should have been included or that person. I mean, it's easy to say that. But, you know, a lot of women, as she said, didn't have a history. Like, women weren't a part of that kind of told history and shared history for so much of the time. So it's only recently that we've started kind of uncovering and sharing more of that, and we have the resources and the technology to do it differently.
Obviously an incredible vision she had for this piece. I have one more question for you. Like, is it like a life-size, like a legit table set for 39 people in real space?
Real space.
Installation, yeah.
It feels like when you walk in the room, with the exception of the fact that it's kind of up on a little bit of a platform, that you could just pull up a chair and sit right down at any one of those spaces. So, yeah.
Amazing. So I'm sure groundbreaking at the time.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and for 60 years, Judy Chicago has been telling the feminist story. And, you know, starting in June through September of 2024, you can see this incredible retrospective that they're doing of her works called Her Story at the Luma Foundation in Arles, France. And it was at the New Museum earlier in New York, but I missed it. But it's really great to see that after 60 years of really a varied career that we're starting to kind of share the full breadth of what she's done.
Oh, yeah. An impressive career over 60 years. So she is, what, about 84-ish now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Around 84. And, you know, her style was incredibly varied, moving from minimalism in the 1960s, everything from works on paper to sculpture, to more revolutionary and kind of activist works in the 1970s, to these incredible series that she's done looking at identity, the Holocaust, as a Jewish artist, environmental collapse, and other kind of breaking issues that have really been meaningful over the last 50 or 60 years. And then huge outdoor installations. I mean, she's really done it all.
So wouldn't it be cool if she created an updated dinner party with that next wave of women that have made a big impact on history with new stories and experiences that, you know, we are now learning more and more about?
Yeah, I love that. That would be great. And it'd be hard to choose, though. I mean, in so many ways, our understanding of identity has grown and become more and more complex. And, you know, it's not just about body parts. There's
absolutely
a bigger framework for it.
Yeah, I really think Judy Chicago, she took this big risk. She showed this, and people loved it. They hated it, but it definitely got them talking and starting conversations. Where can we see this in person?
Yeah, well, thankful to, you know, Elizabeth Sackler. In 2007, she really helped support this to become a part of the Brooklyn Museum's permanent collection, which, you know, is a fantastic outcome other than, you know, getting it stuck into a closet somewhere where people couldn't see it.
Right.
Really fantastic.
So have you seen it in person?
You know, I have, but it's been many, many years since I've seen it. And that was right when I was first learning about it. I'd love to go back with kind of a fresh perspective and keep kind of trying to understand all the different layers that are there that we now know more about than we did, than I did when I was first starting to learn about this.
Okay, one more question.
Yeah.
So when you saw it, were you able to like walk around this triangular table, or were you just viewing it from like one side of the room?
I'd
want to look at every plate and every, you know, runner and spoon and all that.
I got to see the entire installation set up as it was designed to be. But in many cases, in some cases, they have used individual place settings, and they would send five or six to different museums around the world.
And break it up.
So it's really fantastic when you can see the whole thing. You walk into the room and you just feel like that you're waiting for the guest to arrive at any second. And what a cool experience that would be to have dinner next to the primordial goddess.
and her vagina plate.
Yes.
All right, let's go visit it for sure, Zach. I love talking about this one with you, and I appreciate you bringing it to us.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next time, Claire. Great to see you.
You too. Bye.
Bye. If you'd like to learn more about the work of art and the artist, check us out on Instagram, artsnap.pod.
If you liked hanging out today and talking about art, rate us and subscribe wherever you download your podcasts.
See you next time.